Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
So, interesting poll coming out of Arizona. Evidently, Mark Kelly, the Democrat running for Senate there against incumbent Republican Martha McSally, he's up by 16 points in this latest poll. And you go, you know, that was a tight race a little bit ago. Not looking like it now. But again, she's had some serious missteps. And oh, by the way, there's that little virus thing going on down there that's probably weighing in on this as well. And also interesting, the Trump campaign looks like they've walked away from Michigan. I guess not expecting that to happen either. Anyway, here to share some thoughts on where we are, where we're going, and the top stories of the day. I've asked our good friend, former congressman and political analyst, Bob Ney, to come talk with us. Bob, thanks for taking time.
Well, thank you, Rick.
So what do you think? McSally down by 16 to Kelly. I know it's early. We're only 97 days away from Election Day, but wow, that's a big one.
Well, yes, you know, it's early, but yet again, and it's a lifetime in politics, but time's running out in a sense, because when you're an incumbent and you're down that much and you've had the problems that, you know, she's had, then it's going to be a climb upwards, and especially with what's going on with the state, you know, internal problems she's had. The fact he's running a good campaign, I think all in all, this is going to give him the edge. Look, 22 seats on the Republican side were up. In the Senate, I would, if you and I were talking in January, December, I would have said, well, you know, the Senate is probably going to remain on the Republican side. Right now, obviously, all of those dynamics have changed. Things are up for grabs. And throw in the Lincoln Project, which is, you know, a group of never-Trumpers who are actually aiming at Republicans in the race and spending money, and you've got the virus and all the social upheaval, and you've got a lot going down, and the Senate can't decide on a coronavirus bill.
Yeah, isn't that amazing? Is it? I mean, you've been doing this an awful long time.
Right.
Isn't it amazing? I mean, the Democrats are basically giving them whatever they want to go back and look good in their districts and say, "Hey, we brought home the bacon. We've made sure you're going to be safe." And they, you know, it's like they can't take the gift from the gift horse's mouth.
Well, you're right. First of all, the original gift that could have been done way early on would have been an infrastructure transportation bill. I went through two of them myself. That's kumbaya, easy to do, gets the public support. It's a, you know, good thing. You build things in your district, you create jobs. You know, that's kind of a real plus-plus.
Yep.
Never happened. You know, they didn't do that. And they had the gift, I said, because when Trump became president, he would have had a honeymoon on that. You know, everybody knows that. He would have had a honeymoon. And as time went on, of course, everything became polarized. But you would still think right now, the Senate on the Republican side would say, okay, kind of bad times. We're slipping in the polls. We really need a win. You know, let's work, because, you know, the House is at $3 trillion. They're at $1 trillion. So forget the money for a second. They'll come somewhere above in between. But, you know, there's the idea of working out the language of the bill. But right now, I mean, the Republicans, and I think one of the senators, I can't remember who it was, Rick, said that they didn't even understand what the bill was going to do themselves.
I mean, it was probably either Sass or Toomey or any of them who...
One of them.
You know, who was like, you know, I don't know where we're going, because there doesn't seem to be any leadership. And this is the weird thing where I keep looking at this. I know McConnell's not this dithering.
Right.
I know he's not this incompetent. So for me, and I guess it's just kind of being conspiratorial, I'm going, you know, what exactly is he... Is the aim here? Is it just, hey, we're going to surrender this election cycle and we'll fight the battle in 2 years to pick up the House and in 4 to get the White House back? Or, you know, or are they really this divided?
I'd say it's a combination of both. Because, you know him, I know him, McConnell is not operating as McConnell operates, if that makes sense. Now, I was on a conference committee for 2 years with McConnell on a very complicated bill with Chris Dodd, Ted Kennedy, Steny Hoyer, myself, and some others, right? And, you know, you had to try to keep abreast of what McConnell was doing, because he seriously, politically, was always 3 or 4 chess pieces ahead of us. You had to figure him out, you know? And that's how he operates. Right now, he's not even on the chessboard. It's like he's not a participant in this whole thing. and they're just sitting there. Normally, McConnell would call his, you know, people in by now and say, okay, we're going to do something. You know, if it's wrong, we're going to do something. And he hasn't done that. And I can't figure it, because they do right now in the midst of, you know, one of the most unprecedented economic times in our country's history, they're doing nothing.
Yeah, and okay. Worse than that, I mean, on Friday, I guess the House is scheduled to leave for 5 weeks, and I guess the Friday after that, the Senate's scheduled to leave as well. I can't imagine that they will if nothing's passed. But, you know, something's got to get done.
Well, I think when we talked last week, I thought by tomorrow they would have something, and that's not happening. Now, I don't know if he'll keep a few people in D.C., let everybody go home, and then have them work out something, and then, you know, they'd have to drag everybody back, although they could do unanimous consent, but I highly doubt that would happen on this type of bill. So I don't figure it. I don't know if he just thinks that it'll work itself out, or, you know, if he thinks that they'll be in more trouble passing something than not, which is not a good theory, if I were he to have.
Yeah, can they go without passing something? Can that happen? I mean, because, you know, we're looking at the fact that we've already gone over the unemployment cliff. That extra $600 has stopped. The moratorium for, you know, people being evicted from their homes ends. So, you know, I guess beginning the first of this month, if you can't pay your rent, you know, people are going to get chucked to the street. There's so much bad that is looming. To have them just go home would kind of be tone deaf, wouldn't it?
Well, it certainly would, and you're right about the evictions. They are happening. I personally actually dealt with a case. A guy called me today, and I told him what to do because his landlord was receiving federal help and still trying to evict him. How about that one? You know, that's going on around the country, plus the people that maybe didn't fit in the federal protections, and that's expiring, and so what do they do? And you've got all this going down, plus, you know, rising numbers. And let's imagine that the Senate's home and all this starts. Would you want to be a sitting U.S. senator in your state? And you say, well, we're not going back for 5 weeks, but I'll take care of it then. I don't think so.
No, you're right. But, you know, you bring up an interesting point, you know, because, you know, the Democrats have come for Kamala Harris, and I think DeLorio and Presley have come up with this idea of you know, getting legal aid for people who are being evicted. You know, they've got a piece of legislation to fund some legal aid, which we need. We need people, anybody who goes into the court system should have access to quality, affordable legal help. But, you know, my sense was, you know, instead of just giving lawyers money, we should just be paying people's rent for a while or mandating that they can't be evicted, something. But, you know, I guess legal aid is better than nothing. What advice do you give people? I mean, you get this all the time, because I get people saying, you know, well, I'm trying to navigate this system or that system. It just seems so daunting for the average person to have to deal with. Is there any advice you give folks?
Mm-hmm. Well, it is daunting for them because they don't know where to turn. When people have called me, because, you know, I was in office and they called me. I just had a call this week, a guy and his wife, they have three kids. The landlord is abusing them. The landlord thought they could get away with by the 25th of July to throw them out. And I reminded them, since they got federal money, that has to go at least through October. But I told them to get down to legal aid. Of course, legal aid is, you know, right now practically just blown up. It's so busy. But luckily, some of the court systems are backed up. And that's what you need to tell people. And you cross your fingers. The court systems are backed up. The landlord can't technically, in most cases, move on this for 5 or 6 months. Again, most cases. But you can't throw that dice, because some local court might say, oh, no, we're not backed up. We're going to proceed with these. I would hope there could be protections, you know, put in there. A moratorium. A moratorium on it, on the right. Evictions.
No, something. But and when I say that, you know, I know I have a guy who's going to send me an email really angry because he's a landlord. You know, he's going, what about me? What about me? I got to pay my creditors. And what happens if I lose the house? Mm-hmm. And he's right. I mean, this is a systemic problem. Right. How do you deal with the whole chain?
Well, I think, too, and, you know, if you shown that the renter can't do this, also there's got to be some cooperation from the banks. This just can't be where, you know, the landlord, I agree, bears it all. But again, you can't have the families out on the street. So there's got to be some cooperation with the banks, too. Look, during this virus, you can do it. You know, you could call in some cases and say, I can't pay my car for 3 months, and they would yield to it. But with some push, they should be able to, you know, everybody has to suffer through the system, so the bank shouldn't get off the hook for it.
Yeah.
That they're able to foreclose on everybody, but, you know, everybody else has to pay their bills, but the bank, you know, has to collect everything. There should be some pushing to the banks and the financial institutions to do their fair share, too, until this is over with.
No, I'm right there with you. I wanted to get your thoughts on Louis Gohmert, evidently on the day that we passed the death toll of 150,000. Mr. No Mask Louis tested positive for the virus. Any thoughts?
Well, you know, I mean, it's like you run around and you say, well, I don't need a mask, and you're in public office and you test. I mean, at least if you wear the mask, you gave it an effort. Obviously, I don't know what he now will respond to the fact that, you know, you don't need a mask. And now got to see how he reacts. You know, does he go into the quarantine? Does he, you know, stay away from constituents and, you know, in the public in general? I think it's just obviously egg on his face. Although I will ask you this question. Do you think Louis Gohmert cares?
No, I don't. I do find his response kind of interesting, that he believes he got it from wearing the mask.
Yeah, right. From himself. Exactly.
And then, because that was my question, I go, did he borrow somebody's mask? Did I miss something? But now you've got a situation where Nancy Pelosi is now mandating masks in all the House chamber. You know, my question is, why didn't she do that sooner?
Well, it should have been done because, you know, it's like anything. When I got into Congress, you know, the rules applying to the public never applied to Congress. And frankly, Newt Gingrich honestly came up with a great idea that the rules would apply to Congress. It was a great idea. We actually then unionized the Capitol Hill Police. And I remember members were screaming at Newt, you know, how can you do this? And he said, well, you don't like certain things, you need to live under what the rest of the country does. So, you know, sometimes, though, I found you couldn't apply rules. I know I chaired the committee, as you know, that dished out the rules internally for the House, for the Speaker. And boy, sometimes, Steny Hoyer and I, we had a lot of headaches because you tried to implement certain rules on people and they didn't want them to happen. You know, members coming saying, well, I want to have a gun. Well, you couldn't have a gun. It's D.C., you know. Don't think you carve out these special rules, but sometimes people do that. And yeah. So I think that the Speaker probably felt that they would kick back at her, but in you know, hindsight, it'd probably been just better to do it day one. Than if the members didn't do it, then they had to face their constituents.
Yeah, last question I've got for you. I don't know if you saw Trump's tweet today that he informed all of suburban America that they no longer have to worry about those low-income people building houses in their neighborhood. Your thoughts?
Well, yes. I had a friend who posted, and he said, he's a really good friend of mine. He said about racist, and I said, well, wait a minute. Let me correct you for a second. This goes beyond race. 49% of people living in low-income housing are white. 33% are African-American, and the rest of the percentage, you know, 14-15% are Latino. I said, you're not doing yourself a favor to just say this is racist. This is a condemnation of all people who have not had the benefit of receiving, you know, what America should offer to people for a good life. So this wasn't just a racist thing. This was a broad brush. I don't know why he decided to bring that up. I have no idea. In fact, you know, if you look at it, if he's against, quote, the old housing projects, you know, as we called them, then why would he be against Section 8, which puts people into communities with other people? So, you know, everybody can hopefully benefit out of it. So I don't just view it as a racist thing. I view it as just a swat across the face of everybody that needs housing and can't achieve it right now. And on top of it, it's a, you know, ploy for the suburban vote. It's the dangerous thing. In other words, let's take us a step further. If Joe Biden gets in, guess what? Everybody's going to have a mandated Section 8 neighbor, you know? Let's just take it a step further.
Well, that's the argument. And what that means is, and the reason that your friend went to write to the race card is, what that means to white suburban America is, we're going to have those people living next to us.
For sure.
The welfare queen's going to drive up in her Cadillac, Bob.
Exactly. And like I told my friend, go beyond race. It's not just race. It's to scare people of anybody that is in Section 8 housing is going to be forced into the neighborhood by Joe Biden. That's where he didn't say that, but that's maybe where an ad will come out.
No, he didn't say it, but that's what he said.
That's what he said.
Right
exactly.
There. Pretty simple. Yes. Bob, as always, good stuff, man. Appreciate the time.
Thank you. Okay.
Our good friend Bob Ney. Quick break. Right back. Stick around.